Death Parade, starring Frank Sinatra.
Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men?
And now, smile a while with Lorenzo Jones and his wife, Belle.
Here's the Manhattan merry-go-round that brings you the bright side of life, that whirls you in music to all the big night spots of New York town, to hear the top songs of the week sung so clearly you can understand every word and sing them yourself.
This is the Golden Age of Radio. I'm Dick Bertel, and tonight we'll take you on another audio excursion back to radio's formative years. You'll hear the programs that made the era golden, and meet people who made those broadcasts a reality.
The Golden Age of Radio, WTIC's monthly program of radio nostalgia. Our guest tonight was a network radio producer and audio technician. And here to introduce him to you is your host, Dick Bertel.
Good evening, and with me once again is radio collector Ed Corcoran. And Ed, we're bringing back a guest who was with us several months ago tonight, because his career touched on such a fabulous era in radio broadcasting, the formative years of network radio.
Yeah, from 1929 to approximately 1947, if I recall, Dick.
That's right. Aldo Gisalbert of New Milford, Connecticut, is our guest again. And I guess we had such a great reaction to your first visit that we just want to tell more stories or hear more stories from you about those formative years when you were both an engineer and a producer with NBC. I thought we would talk about, some of the things that people perhaps don't realize with regard to the early networks. The fact, for example, at NBC that they wouldn't allow anything recorded on the air.
Well, it was not only NBC, but I believe the same existed with our competitive network at that time, which was CBS.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was more of a prestige thing, since there were many, many small stations coming into being throughout the country. And, of course, in order to exist, they were playing phonograph music, naturally. And some were picking up little minor orchestras from dance halls, local dance halls, or small restaurants and hotels, and trying to put on little dramatic shows of their own, most of them late in the day, God bless them, because they didn't have the facilities nor the talent. So NBC, in order to build themselves up, everything had to be done, as well as CBS, had to be done manually. Sound effects had to be done manually. Wind had to be created in strange manners and ways. As an example, they would use what corresponded to a carpet roller, corrugated, and over that they would put a piece of canvas. And as they rotated this corrugated wheel over the top of the canvas, it sounded as though a terrific storm was coming. If lightning struck, the lightning that struck would be a fellow with a wide stick, about 2 inches wide and possibly 3 feet long, made of very flexible wood, hitting a pad very similar, like a pad you on a stuffed chair.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That would give the effect of lightning. Now, when lightning struck and the fire would be formed, they would take ordinary cellophane and crumple that cellophane. And as the roof fell in, they would take a small little, not tomato box or something, or made out of very thin wood, or a thin cigar box. Cigar boxes today are not made of wood, but then they were. And they would crumble that before the microphone.
Well, I guess these sound effects, man, were like our special effects people in movies. Were there any these effects were very hard to achieve, and it took an awful lot of ingenuity before they finally
What part would you play as the engineer, for example, in trying to pick up these effects?
Well, you would try to pick up, and of course you would also lend your ideas and imagination towards these things, and that was all amalgamated together. It was a great and happy family, you know, in those days. Everyone worked together humorously, and...
Well, you had a pass on him. If it didn't sound like you wanted it, the guy had to keep working until he...
Well, he had to keep working until he were right. But they had an experimental laboratory where they had all sorts of things. Men going on underwater, they would take it was very, very funny. They would take a soda glass, about the size of a soda glass, and put a straw in the bottom. The guy would just blow in it. And it would sound like a guy going down for the last time. It was the strangest doggone things.
So the microphone would distort in many ways. It would take a simple sound and make it gargantuan.
That's right. And later on, we did something special with the microphone, too. We had certain characteristics which we would put in filters in the microphone to eliminate certain frequencies and accentuate other frequencies to bring out certain effects.
Now you said, too...
And echo chambers and sort of things of that kind.
You said, too, Gis, that the actors and actresses themselves had to learn how to use a microphone properly so that they could develop the proper perspective
for
the director. And they would do mechanical fades, for example.
Oh, definitely. Well, today with TV, you see, you have the assistance of your eye. And that is a wonderful medium. So-and-so and Jane is coming down the pike riding a horse, you know. She's very hardly visible on the screen. She's accompanied by a symphony orchestra, and she's singing right in your ear. It doesn't increase or decrease as she comes on stage. Well, now, if that were taken in radio, you had to create all your perspective in radio by sound. Mm-hmm. If someone were coming in a distance and opening a door, that sound effect had to be at a distance. The door would be closed. The footsteps would come in, and they would increase in intensity until they finally got on stage. And if they called, they would call off stage. Or if they were talking as they were coming in, that voice would be coming louder, not only in intensity, but also in distant value. If a fellow was before the microphone, now he could do it two ways, standing up. Each one normally had a microphone. So they say they were fading off microphone. They could do it two ways, by walking backwards, and that was rather dangerous if you had a lot of sound effects. You might waltz into a sound effect or take a timpani with you or a few musicians. So what they do, they went down on their haunches, and they practically wound up on the floor and kept on talking or playing a violin sometimes going down. That would give the same effect as going away. Now, if you had these antics today and someone that hadn't seen that before, they would look at that thing. You couldn't possibly have a live audience on that because people would laugh their heads off.
Well,
but there were characters, you know, men as well as females, that would imitate crying babies or imitate also barnyard noises or birds. And these characters would come in, well, properly dressed, you know. Some of them are not only well-dressed, but very well-dressed, and produce these baby sounds. And people will look at those, like, that guy's a nut. But all this was taken very, very serious in those days, because even though you looked at a program, the fact that you saw all these antics going on, in your mind's eye, your eyes were closed to what was going on, and your ears were receiving an image that you can't possibly get today. If you were to take the average TV show, and I'm not throwing off on TV, mind you, and close your eyes on a dramatic show, you'd be in a hell of a soup trying to find out what was going on.
I suppose you would.
Because the perspective would be completely destroyed because your eyes are your assist there.
We'll get back to our guest, Aldo Gisalbert, right after this.
The fourth dimension, the future. The inexplicable, the unknown. In the theater of your mind, hear Surface Tension, an NBC radio network drama from the X-1 science fiction series.
Well now, what is the urgent nature of your visit?
Mr. President, for some time now at the Nuclear Institute, a group of us have been making a study of a new star. Mr. President, the effect of this new star in our galaxy will be extremely catastrophic. At the rate it's expanding, it will cause the sun to explode.
Surface Tension. Radio drama on X-1. Saturday night at 7:30 on WTIC Radio. See it in your mind.
Well, Gis, along about the outbreak of World War II, your radio career changed dramatically because you were bilingual, and this came in rather handy, I suppose.
Forcibly. I say forcibly because it was command performance from Early's office in Washington that NBC, as well as CBS, and I was producing in both NBC and CBS as well, programs for Latin America propaganda programs. Such programs as the March of Time, the Cavalcade of America, This is the Enemy, Barren Axis, and many, many more. Viva America, which was a musical program, and so on.
Speaking of This is the Enemy, we don't happen to have it in Spanish, but this is a show that we haven't heard very much about, Ed, and you do have one in your collection, don't you?
Yes, Dick. I'm rather proud of this show. It was done during World War II, and it was purely propaganda.
I think it was its purpose
in English, too.
Yes.
And it did have a lot of important radio actors that were available at that
definitely.
Time. And it was kind of what we were doing in English, the Germans were doing in German, trying to present our side of the war.
The United States government presents Death is Our Enemy. Tonight, a united nation goes forward with the determination to win this war and bring about a just and enduring peace. But we cannot win our war or make our peace unless we understand the character of the enemy we are fighting. That is why your government is bringing these programs to you. This is a program of truth. This is the truth about our enemy. This is the story of a great slip-up, a big mistake our enemy made because of something he doesn't understand, the valor of the human spirit. Czechoslovakia had been taken at Munich without the firing of a shot, the waste of a single German soldier. And now just move in and check that country off the problem list. Of course, the Czech people would obey. They were defeated. They were helpless.
There will be a parade in Prague Wednesday to honor the National Socialist Party and to pay tribute to Reich Protector von Neurath. All Czech citizens will attend and cheer.
You see, the Czechs came as ordered. They line the streets. Do not cheer much.
Ah, that won't show in the pictures. Konrad, you have your camera ready to catch Neurath as he passes by here?
Yeah, Herr Colonel. This balcony is the best spot?
Yeah. You see there, just below us, all the little Czech children in their white dresses and best suits?
Yeah, the flowers in their hands.
Yeah, that was my idea. When Reichsprotector Neurath passes, they will throw the flowers at his feet. Make a fine newsreel shot. Clear evidence, friendly collaboration, exposing the myth of that democratic Tsar, German rape of Slovakia.
Excellent.
Ah, there's Neurath. Why doesn't the child...
He's raising his arm in a signal now. He's calling out.
Here he comes. Turn your backs, everybody. Face the other way.
Oh, yes.
Now throw your flowers away from him.
The Nazis didn't get their pretty pictures. But, after all, revolt of the children, what did that matter? The conquerors strode on. Poland. Denmark. Norway. Norway would be easy.
Norway is a Nordic state very much like Germany, Franz. It is easy to understand the people here and handle them.
Yeah, not even language difficulty here. Most of them speak German, I understand.
Yeah.
Learn it in their schools. The required subject.
But the Norwegians had thought of that, too. In whispered warnings...
Turn your backs on the Germans. Do nothing to help them. They ask you questions, shake your heads or stare. Their language has become one of blood and lust. We no longer understand it. Say only that to them in our own dear language. Jeg forstår Hekaderes Brook. I do not understand German. Make it a theme song of Norway's refusal to give in.
You there, girl. Tell me, how do we go to reach the house
Jeg
of...
Jeg forstår Hekaderes Brook.
Oh, where is the...
Yeg Forstari Caderis Frog.
What is the name of the place?
Yeg Forstari Caderis Frog.
Yeg Forstari Caderis Frog.
Yeg Forstari Caderis Frog.
Yeg Forstari Caderis Frog.
Annoying? Yes. Provoking? Inconvenient? Insulting? But really of no consequence. Check off Norway. Taken. And move on. Greece. Holland. Belgium. France. Rest a minute, conquerors. Look at that altered map with pleasure.
All of Europe, ours.
All of Europe, yours. But things are happening in some of those captured countries. In Brussels, Belgium.
But I tell you, they shout at me in the street. Those Belgian pigs. They insult me. It is not safe to walk alone here if you are German.
I understand, Frau Hartmann, but we are getting many complaints. It's difficult to police everywhere. However, we have worked out the system. If there's any trouble, call us immediately on 22221 and we will set the motorcycle squadron immediately. We will put it on the radio tonight so that everyone will know. Heil Hitler, Frau Hartmann.
Any Germans in Brussels molested on the streets should immediately call number 22221 and we will send officers. Under no circumstances shall any Belgian call that number.
Under no circumstances shall any Belgian call it. Under no circumstances.
What is it, Henri? What are you thinking?
So, no Belgian is to call that number. Wait till I get Jean-Baptiste.
No. No, Henri, they could trace the calls. No!
They couldn't trace them from public street boxes, Maria.
22221. 22221. Yes? Yes, where? Montague Street and Avenue Louise? At once. Another complaint.
The squad isn't back from the other ship.
Yes? 22221. That's right.
What? Throwing stones and using clubs?
Another?
Everyone is out now on duty. So many calls. We'll send someone when we can, yes.
Yeah? 22221. Yeah?
Captain Gerhardt.
Oh, glad you are back. We are getting four calls a minute.
I hope there are better calls than the three we've just been on.
What do you mean, better?
False alarm.
Jokes. What?
Each call was the same. When we got there, the streets were empty. No complainants, no violators, but on the wall, scrawled in chalk, a V sign. And 1918.
Belgian.
Obviously.
Then all these calls.
Yeah, of course, playing jokes. But degenerate people, they lose a war and yet play stupid jokes on their betters.
But don't you see? They do not seem to think we are their betters. They are not acting as though they are afraid of us in spite of everything. I do not like that. They ought to be afraid.
This is the enemy. Of course, obviously it is... propaganda today. It's recognized.
Yeah, it's part of an era, and that's why I thought it would be interesting to hear it once more.
Our guest is Aldo Gisalbert of New Milford, Connecticut, and we're talking about those grand days before World War II and those memorable days during World War II. And Gis, during the time that you were working for the Spanish service of the broadcasting medium, you also kept your hand in at freelancing here in the States, didn't you, on the regular networks?
Oh, yes. Well, you see, before I went freelancing, and freelancing was freelancing in radio as well as for the government, I had such programs, as an example, all of the Hummert programs for Blackett, Sample, and Hummert. And I mean that all of the programs. I don't mean that I had some of the dramatic shows, but most of his musical shows. And I kept every single one of them on a freelance basis.
Now, the Hummerts were whom?
Frank and Ann Hummert were a couple of characters, bless their hearts. But they owned outright the title and the programs that were musical programs that were produced under the labels of Blackett, Sample, and Hummert. Now, you had... Friday Night on Broadway, as an example. The American Melody Hour at CBS. You had Frank Munn and Virginia Ray on NBC. You had many, The Waltz Time. You had all sorts of musical programs. And these musical programs, fortunately, I kept.
And I think perhaps the most famous was Manhattan Merry-Go-Round.
Manhattan Merry-Go-Round, yes. It was the most famous because you had two of the most delightful people in radio. Frank Munn, who had an angelic voice, and Frank, I should say, if he ever got on the scales at that time, weighed no less than 350 pounds or more.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Virginia Ray was just the opposite. She was a slim little girl. But both of them, they were troopers of the first waters. They had delightful voices. Abe Lyman was a very fine conductor.
What was the concept, as far as the Hummerts were concerned, in presenting a musical program?
Well, today it would be called corny. But there is nothing wrong with good, especially good corn from Connecticut. You know, we have the best corn in the country in Connecticut.
I agree.
And the Hummerts had a beautiful, corny recipe for their programs. The program was introduced, first of all, by name. The theme sang about Manhattan and its environs, its atmosphere. The first number was introduced by the title of the song itself, and the lyrics were also recited together with the copy. The principles were then introduced, and as a final payoff, again, the lyrics, portion of the lyrics were identified. So by the time that you got the first few bars of the introduction, you knew that number. It was corny, but it was extremely effective. It was a little tiresome at times to the intellectual, but doggone it, the music was good. The songs were good. The orchestra were all pros, and the principal were all pros. And people could put up with the introduction if they had to.
Well, I wish we could play an excerpt from Manhattan Merry-Go-Round, but Ed, you indicate that this is one of the hardest shows to come by, and we just can't come up with a copy of it tonight. So I thought we'd turn to another of the very popular Hummett programs. This is a soap opera I'm sure everybody will recall, Ma Perkins. And this particular episode takes us back to the year 1944.
Everyone was interested in asking Fay about the trouble between Ma and Evie. But there was nothing Fay could say except that Ma thinks there's something wrong in the Fitz home. You see, Ma went there during Evie's absence to talk to Mrs. Norris, and Ma tripped her up on a couple of points. Now she's afraid Ma has begun to suspect that Mrs. Norris isn't Evie's mother. After Ma had gone, Willie and Evie returned home. And Mrs. Norris told Evie her version of Ma's visit. She claimed that Ma is jealous and for that reason is trying to get rid of her. At that point, Willie walked out of the house and didn't say where he was going, and that frightened Mrs. Norris. Now it's a few minutes later. Upstairs in the room that was formerly Willie's, we find Mrs. Norris packing. Evie still doesn't understand what this is all about and is saying,
Mother, Willie and I have done everything we could to make you happy here.
Evie, if you'll just let me get at my clothes, I'm leaving this house tonight.
But I just don't know what to say.
Will you hand me that dress there, please?
Mother, if you have to go, this is no way for you to leave.
You should never have let William go out of that front door.
I don't know where Willie went to.
Well, I do. And it's just to cause trouble. William went straight to Mrs. Perkins, that's where. The dress, please.
Now, look. Here you are, Mother.
The two of them have conspired to get me out of this house ever since I've been here.
But, Mother, what I'm trying to tell you is I'll see to it that they leave you alone. Both of them.
Jealousy. 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 That's all it is, jealousy. Mrs. Perkins knows she isn't your mother, and she resents the fact that I am. Well, I'm leaving.
Oh, Mother, you can't. Not this way. I'll do anything I can. I'll go talk to Ma right this minute.
You stay away from Mrs. Perkins.
Well, I'll talk to Willie.
You should have never let Willie go out of that front door. Hand me those shoes there, please. William just went to stir up trouble.
Mother, there's no trouble Willie could stir up.
I came here in good faith, and hand me those stockings, please. How have I been treated?
I'm telling you, I didn't know anybody'd been treating you badly.
Now he's gone to get her, and the two of them will be back coming back here. to berate me some more.
Oh, Mother, that's fantastic. There's nothing Ma could come over here for. What could she come for?
Well, I'm not going to be here when she gets here. That's final. I've had all I care to have of this.
Oh, Mother. Mother, I just don't know what to say.
I'm taking the train from the junction tonight.
And now we look in at Ma's house. Ma has just returned home, and we find Faye and Ma in the parlor as the doorbell rings.
Oh, I'll get it, Ma.
I wonder who that could be.
Oh, Willie.
Hiya, Faye.
Oh, it's Willie.
Is Ma in the parlor?
Ma and Shuffle.
Hi, everybody.
Hello. Willie.
Say, you've changed the furniture around.
You haven't been around here enough lately to know what's been going on, Willie.
Well, yeah, that's right, Faye. Say, Ma, I'm dying to tell you what happened.
Well, it's all right, Willie. Go right ahead. I was just telling Shuffle and Faye.
Well, Ma, when Evie and me come in, Mother Norris was standing there in the parlor, fit to be tied. No more than we hit the door than she says, Evie, could I talk to you a minute? Well, I hung around, and Mother says, Evie, could I see you alone?
Why, William, you mean Mother didn't want to talk to you, William?
Now, listen, Shuffle, you cut out that William stuff.
Shuffle. What happened, Willie? Go ahead.
Well, Ma, I got out. There was nothing else to do. I went on back in the dining room to help Junior with his homework. Well, I was helping the kid, but I couldn't help overhearing some things from up in the parlor, see? William and Ma Perkins. William and Ma Perkins. William and Ma Perkins.
But what was Mrs. Norris saying, Willie?
Well, I couldn't tell, not exactly. So I just went on back in the parlor and I said, just a minute now. You've been kicking the name William around just a little bit too much. Then she said she was leaving the house.
Leaving the house? You mean going away?
Yeah, tonight. Says she's going tonight.
You sure, Willie?
Mother's leaving tonight. Ain't that a payoff? Boy, from now on, the Fitz home is going to be a decent place to hang a hat.
Oh, well, if that's the way it is, I better...
Ma, I'm telling you, I don't know how to begin to thank you. What you getting up for, Ma? Where are you going?
Say, get my coat.
No, get it right away, Ma.
Can I help, Ma?
No, Shuffle. You just sit with Willie.
Say, what's going on here? I don't get it. Where's Ma going, Shuffle?
Willie, let me get some sense into your head.
Huh?
You think Ma just wanted to get Ms. Norris out? Is that all you thought she wanted?
Well, I thought, Ma said...
Willie, don't you realize that woman's a phony?
Huh? Who do you mean? Mother Norris?
Don't you think Ma knows it?
Pony, you mean Mother Norris isn't Evie's mother? Oh, now, Shuffle, that's all been proven.
It hasn't been proven, you dimwit. That's just it. And if that woman gets out of this town before Ma can make her admit it, well, things are right back where they were. And they'll stay that way. Now, don't you see?
Well, I'll be a monkey's uncle. Boy, oh boy, oh boy. Did Ma and me hit on something. Well, in that case, I better be getting on over there with Ma and see this thing through.
Come back here, Willie. Sit down. Ma didn't ask you to go with her. Just sit and hope that Ma can get there in time before that woman is gone.
And will Ma get there in time? Well, only time will tell. But even though Ma does get to Mrs. Norris before she gets away, will Mrs. Norris admit she isn't Evie's mother? Well, we'll see.
I guess you were associated with so many of the musical programs that one would naturally think of your hit parade as being one of them, and I guess we would be right.
Well, yes, you would be. Not only did we do the hit parade in English, but as well as in Portuguese and Spanish to Latin America. Now, that was a very unusual program. That program had to satisfy one individual.
The president of American Tobacco Company.
The president of American Tobacco Company, Mr. Hill. And what Mr. Hill couldn't hum or his wife couldn't bow her head to... was scratched off the air. It made no difference who liked it or disliked it.
Did you ever have any direct dealings with him?
No one had direct dealings with outside of the agency, and the representatives changed quite often. Because if you disagreed with the gentleman, you were a dead pigeon. And since we didn't want to get into a hassle with him, we just kept away from him.
Yeah. Of what magnitude was your hit parade? What did it consist of in the way of... orchestra, size of orchestra, singers, and so on.
Well, the size of the orchestra, I would say the size of the orchestra was somewhere in the neighborhood of 57 to 60 men. It was an oversized job, to say the least. And it was a good orchestra, but everything had to be done double quick time. I mean, everybody was racing to a ball game. It wasn't very easy on the ears. The agent of that program Hans Metzger and Company were in Chicago. And Hans Metzger had a son. And he didn't know what in heaven's name to do with this son. So he sent him down as the agency representative. And I had to chaperone his big oaf all over the place. It drove me completely insane. If it weren't for the fact that I was crazy about the show and Ronnie Baker, I would have bled a long time ago.
Ed, can you provide us with a memory or two from your hit parade?
Yes, I think I have one, Dick, that goes back to about that era. I haven't heard it myself in some time, so I'm looking forward to it, to hearing it again also.
The Hit Parade. For the next hour, the 15 most popular songs of this week, played by Lenny Hayton and his orchestra and sung by Lucky's own group of soloists. Once again, the voice of the people has spoken in selecting the tunes for the Hit Parade. New Yorkers and Californians, Northerners and Southerners, Republicans, Democrats, men, women, and children, 120 million of you have told us what songs you want to hear this Saturday night. You've told us by your purchases of sheet music and records, by your requests to orchestra leaders at places you dance, by the tunes you listen to on favorite radio programs. That's why the Hit Parade is your own program. Lenny Hayton and the Lucky Strike Orchestra step out with a melody that ranks 13th in your preference this week, Lulu's Back in Town. Ranking song in countrywide popularity this week is And Then Some. In just a moment, the Melody Girls will bring you the word.
Thank you. and frantic, excited, romantic, and then moonshine. I used to think that the chorus would be, but I'd agree, the joke is on me. Because the way I knew I had it bad. If nothing might be crazy, then I want to go mad. I want to go mad, I'll kiss you, caress you, I'll spoil you, and yes, you, and then moonshine. I'll be your saddle, your slave, your army, and navy, and then moonshine. Across my heart, I'll be your sun tonight. You find me right under your thumb. Cause you're strong in your hands, and you're perfect, and then some.
Back to the 30s, and that's, of course, the period at which you were producing the show.
That's right.
And there was one particular show, a great musical program with which you were associated, Giss, where the sponsor's wife inadvertently created the theme song.
That happened on a delightful day. It happened, matter of fact, I believe, on a Thanksgiving day when we were forced to work at NBC and this program hadn't been on at the time. Aloysia Avrilla was the announcer. Bill Daly was the conductor, and this was the Firestone Hour. And Mr. and Mrs. Harvey Firestone Jr. would come down most every week. They were the sweetest and nicest people you could ever come in contact with. And at this particular day, to celebrate, they had a whole suite of rooms at the McAlpin Hotel. Mrs. Firestone Sr. came down. Bill Daly was a glorious conductor, a wonderful person, and a character. If Bill was cold, underneath his white tie outfit, he would wear a tattered green sweater. And that tattered green sweater, the sleeves, as he was conducting, would come out more and more until he finally practically covered his hands. Bill was completely oblivious to all this and happy as a cocoon. Well, we happened to be at dinner in between rehearsal and the broadcast as guests of Mrs. Firestone Sr., in their suite of rooms at the McAlpin. Lois Avrilla was there, I was there, our engineer at the time was there, Weiss, Jens Weiss, and also Bill Daly. During the course of dinner, Mrs. Firestone said, "Mr. Daly, you know, there's a tune that's been going through my mind. I just can't get it out of my head. Do you mind if I hum it?" "Well, I'd be delighted, won't you do that?" So she hummed it. With this, Bill took out a pencil and paper and jotted down a few guiding notes. Well, the following week, with chorus, orchestra, principals, and all, came, and she was a guest. We made sure that she would be a guest, Mrs. Firestone Sr., at the program. And Bill Daly came forth with this number of Mrs. Firestone Sr., with the most beautiful orchestration that you ever heard. Well, the old lady was so moved that she was in tears.
I can imagine.
And it's been the theme song ever since.
Yeah, I could tell you, wasn't that the
that's
name?
That's right, I think you're right, Ed.
If I could tell you.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight, Music We Love presents for your enjoyment a program of symphonic music under the direction of the famous American conductor, Howard Barlow, and featuring tonight's special guest.
If I could tell you of my devotion, if I could pledge all my love,
Our guest tonight on Music We Love is the well-known Russian-American baritone Igor Gorin.
Find expression in all the music my heart sings to you.
Medley from the musical fantasy based on the old fairy tale Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
Whistle while you work. Put on that grin and start right in to whistle loud and long. Just on a merry tune. Just do your best and take a rest and sing yourself a song.
Well, guess one of the great comedians with whom you worked, I guess you were the producer on the program. Perhaps you were the engineer, too. I don't know. Was Banjo Eyes himself, Eddie Cantor.
Oh, yes, absolutely. That, yes.
In which capacity, or both?
Both capacities, yes.
Freelance. What sort of a person was Eddie Cantor like to work with?
Eddie Cantor was... He was like that fly we were trying to catch a little while ago in the studio. He would be four places at the same time. He was a nervous little fellow, a wonderful personality. It was the hardest thing in the world to try to catch him with a microphone. We would have microphones in different positions, so wherever you happen to be, we'd turn that microphone on, absolutely sure to catch him in time.
Ed, do you have any favorites on the Eddie Cantor show?
Yeah, I'm kind of partial to the Mad Russian. The Russians have been kind of under the gun here.
Well, yes, they were
pretty good
at
that time.
Of course, you had a good many Russian programs on, too. Yes.
Everybody loved them, I would say.
Yes.
Do you think you could recreate him for us?
Yes, not myself, but I have a recording which will do the job.
Here we go.
The Eddie Cantor Show! Last week, Harry Von Zell quit Eddie Cantor, thinking he had won $10,000 on a racehorse. After he quit his job, he learned the horse was disqualified. So tonight, we find Harry drowning his sorrows at Joe's Bar and Grill.
All right, bartender, fill it up again.
Now look, Von Zell, don't you think you've had enough? You can hardly move now.
I don't care. Fill it up once more.
Okay. But this is the last time I fill this bowl with pretzels. Look, Harry, why don't you forget your pride and ask Cantor to take you back?
Never.
He'll come crawling to me. Just let him go on the air tonight without me and flop.
You know, he may get another announcer.
Another announcer? You think the public would stand for that? And besides, no announcer would take my job away from me. We announcers stick together.
Quiet, Harry. Here's the program.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Eddie Cantor Show, and tonight I'm forced to tell you that Harry Von Zell will not be with us.
Did you hear that, Von Zell?
Sure, sure. They always applaud when they hear my name.
Ah, but listen. In place of Harry Von Zell, we bring you that genial, jovial gentleman from the Jack Benny program, Don Wilson.
What?
Don Wilson taking your place? I thought you said you announcers stuck together.
Well, have you ever seen Wilson? He looks like two announcers stuck together. Listen to him.
This is yours truly, Don Wilson, introducing Eddie Cantor, singing our opening song, Did You Ever Get That Feeling in the Moonlight?
Oh, yeah? Well, they can't get away with this, doing a show without me. I'm going to see our sponsor, Mr. Moran. I'll show Cantor I'm no jellyfish. I'm full of spirit. I'm full of fight.
Okay, Von Zell, but before you go, I'll tell you something else you're full of. My pretzels.
Did you ever get that feeling in the moonlight? That wonderful feeling that you want to be kissed? You're strolling in the park, the stars so bright above. You'd love to love somebody, but there's nobody there to love. Did you ever get that longing on a June night? That wonderful longing you can never resist. Did you ever get that feeling in the moonlight? That feeling that says you want to be kissed? Did you ever get that feeling in the moonlight? That feeling you want to be kissed? Why you're strolling in the park, the stars are bright above. You'd love to love somebody, but there's nobody there to love. Did you ever get that longing on a June night? That longing you just can't resist. Did you ever get that feeling in the moonlight? The feeling that says you wanna be kissed. Watch your lipstick. The feeling that says you wanna be kissed.
A10 North Camden Drive. The girl at the employment agency said I could go to work for a glamour star who lives here. Camden Drive. Ann Sheridan lives on the street. Ann Sheridan. This must be my lucky day. I hope she's home. Hello. Hello. How do you do? Russian, I thought Ann Sheridan was living here in this house. I'm disappointed.
Ha! He's disappointed.
Russian, please be serious. If I can't work at all, I'll be standing on the corner of Hollywood and Vine, begging.
Careful!
Yeah?
I'd never allow you to stand begging on the corner of Hollywood and Vine.
You wouldn't?
That's my corner. Take Sunset.
Look, Russian. Russian, don't you understand, please?
Yes?
I've lost my radio job. I'm desperate. I'm even willing to take this job as your valet.
Very well, Kempfer. You may join my staff.
Tell me, what are my duties?
If I ring once, that is for the upstairs maid.
Mm-hmm.
If I ring twice, that is for the downstairs maid.
What about me?
You get your own maid. Yep.
Russian.
Yes?
Tell me what my duties are.
Oh, yes. In the morning, you will go to the doorstep, pick up what the milkman left, and carry it into my house.
The milk?
No, me.
Maybe we'll find a new script on the doorstep, huh? Russian, I don't understand. The milkman brings you home? You mean to say that you drink?
That is quite so.
Yes?
Every morning for breakfast, I want my own formula for rum and Coca-Cola.
Your own formula? What is that?
First, I am taking 1 jigger of Cuban rum.
Yes.
2 jiggers of Jamaica rum.
Mm-hmm.
Then I am adding 3 jiggers of Puerto Rican rum.
Yes.
And finally, 1 jigger of Hawaiian rum.
But, Russian, you haven't once mentioned Coca-Cola.
After all that rum, who can say Coca-Cola?
All right, Russian. Go on with my duties.
After you wake me up in the morning...
Yes?
Immediately, lift the Venetian blinds.
The Venetian blinds. Where are they?
Across the street in Barry Grable's house.
Russian, tell me, when do I start?
First, I must check on your references.
Yes?
I have to be careful, you know.
Yeah?
Only recently, I had trouble with my chauffeur.
Tell me, what happened?
You see...
Yeah?
One morning, I overheard him planning to take my car and run away with my wife.
Yeah.
And that night, while I was asleep, it happened.
He took your car and ran away with your wife?
Most, yes.
Russian, if you knew he was going to take your car and run away with your wife, why did you leave the keys in the car?
Silly boy.
Oh, I'd never work for you. I'm getting out of here.
Well, Gis, it's been great fun. Certainly listening to that recording of yours, Ed, and recalling your career during the golden days of radio. Why did you finally decide to leave the business, which was in 1947?
Well, it was very easy. We were going into canned music at that time, and most of my exercise was gained by visiting friends of mine who were being operated on for ulcers. And I was allergic to ulcers.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to go towards Latin America and finally wind up in Florida. And one day I came up to New England for a vacation. That was 3 years later. I made the grave mistake of coming up to New England in the fall of the years when the leaves were turning.
Mm-hmm.
I looked at my wife. I said, "This is terrific. Let's stay here for a while. Let's try to see if we can find a little small place where we can live." We did. We're still living there.
Good for you. Aldo Gisalbert, thank you very much for being our guest once again here on the Golden Age of Radio. It's been great fun.
Yes, and I think we'll have to even back have a third time, Dick.
we still
haven't covered the whole story.
We'll do that. But until next time, this is Dick Bertel.
This is Ed Cochran.
Good night.
The Golden Age of Radio, WTIC's monthly program of radio nostalgia, was hosted by Dick Bertel and radio historian Ed Cochran. Be sure to hear the next Golden Age of Radio broadcast Wednesday, February 20th at 9:05, when our guest will be actor Larry Haynes, now featured on the CBS television daily drama Search for Tomorrow. You'll hear about his radio career and listen to excerpts from programs such as Inner Sanctum. With engineering and technical supervision of Bob Schirrego, the Golden Age of Radio is produced and edited by Brian Hartnett. This is Arnold Dean.
Pillsbury Snow Sheen Cake Flour brings you Grand Central Station.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum. This is your host to welcome you in through the squeaking door to another half hour of horror.